It's that time. There's nothing more to say than it's that time. It's time for Arthur. It's Arthur time. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, is here on Robin Hood Radio. Thank goodness. Hello, Arthur.
Good morning, or afternoon, or whatever time of day you're listening.
Was it you that I told? I finally figured it out. It came from the Truman Show. It was Jim Carrey. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening.
You told us that last week.
I don't know.
Well, whoever it was.
That's a reference I don't remember.
Finally.
Anyway, I woke up this morning, and it was cold. And so the first thing, of course, I thought of was, let's make some soup. It's soup season.
Right.
When I got to thinking about what kind of soup I was going to make, I realized I bought too many potatoes the other day. So it's going to be potato soup. Now, there are a zillion million recipes for potato soup in the Webiverse. I don't know what it'll be in the universe, but on the web. But not the one that I'm going to make, which is from a book called the Molly Goldberg Cookbook. Do you remember Molly Goldberg?
I do.
The real person's name was Gertrude Berg. She was a brilliant woman. I think the first woman ever to write, produce, direct, do everything on TV. And in fact, her show was called The Goldbergs when it was on TV, but before then it had another name. And it was a program, to fill in those who don't remember this at all, or know about this at all, it was a program about immigrants. Molly and her husband, and I think it was uncle, whatever, was a brother, and her two children who were nearly adult or adult, their life in the Bronx as a Jewish immigrant family. And, of course, in that time, we're talking about the early 50s, there were a lot of families like this. They weren't necessarily Jewish. They were other kinds of immigrant families. And everybody could relate. Every immigrant family could relate to the Goldbergs because their trials and tribulations and love life was the same as others, like Italians and Irish. Those are the other big ethnic groups. Anyway, this potato soup is Gertrude Berg, brilliant woman that she was, wrote a Molly Goldberg cookbook, which was a huge success. And I'm sure you can still find it at bookstores that carry old cookbooks. It's around. It was one of the, when I was collecting old cookbooks, now I have a collection of old cookbooks. When I was collecting old cookbooks, I did find lots of copies of that around. And it's a really good book. It has very good recipes.
I bet if I look at the bargain barn, I can find it. That's where I found a couple of your books. And I've just been really lucky there with cookbooks because
let's not get into cookbooks.
Yeah, I was just going to say, including Arthur. Go on.
Yeah.
All right.
I can't find good homes for my cookbooks. Everybody, when I ask them, do you cook? Oh, yeah. How would you like some cookbooks? They say, I go to the internet for everything. That's why I wanted to say, you won't find this potato soup on the internet. You'll only find it in,
I'll be a good home
my,
for your
in my Jewish cookbook, which is called Arthur Schwartz's Jewish Home Cooking.
And I'll be a good home for your cookbooks.
Well, come to Brooklyn and haul them away.
No,
I'm not joking.
I'm not joking either.
Take a visit. I'll make you a bowl of spaghetti, and you'll go through the collection and see what you want. Anyway, this recipe is in one of my books, with Jewish Home Cooking.
Which is in my studio.
And Mrs. Goldberg, the character, Molly Goldberg, had an upstairs neighbor named Mrs. Barnett, and this is Mrs. Barnett's creamed potato soup. I haven't made this in years. I remember liking it very much, and I see what the secret is here. No secret, but a lot of these kind of soups are thickened with flour and they get or cornstarch, and I don't like them. But this one is, of course, potatoes themselves are a thickening. But this one is also has an addition of 2 tablespoons of pearl barley, of just, you know, of barley. Now, barley is a wonderful thickener. In this case, you're not even going to know it's there once the soup is all cooked. I mean, there won't be any sense of barley, but it will help make a liaison for the soup. So I bought too many potatoes, so I'm making potato soup. This is how sometimes these things go. But, you know, thinking about this morning, I realized that all the soups that I crave come under the general category of Jewish soup. They're the soups that were served years ago, now these places don't exist, in kosher dairy restaurants, which meant there could be no broth in any of the soups, and also in delicatessens. So we were, of course, those were meat restaurants, so they could have a meat in the soup, but no cream or butter. So the potato soup, this potato soup, is a dairy soup. And it is like, you know, it's, I think, a better version of what you used to be able to get in the dairy restaurants. So for it, you need a nice big saucepan. You're going to melt some butter, I would say about 3 tablespoons of butter, and a couple of cups of chopped onion, which would be 2 medium onions, and a cup of diced celery. This is what gives it a little fresh edge. Celery always, to me, adds a fresh edge to things. So a cup of diced celery. That's going to be at least a couple of outside ribs of celery. 2 pounds of potatoes, peeled and cut into half-inch cubes, more or less cubes, and 6 cups of water, as I said, no broth, a couple tablespoons of barley, a couple of teaspoons of salt. We'll start out with that, but I find you have to add salt at the end anyway. So you melt the butter over medium heat, saute the onion until it's golden and tender. Takes about 10 minutes. Don't rush it. You'll burn it. And then you add the celery, potatoes, water, and barley. Bring it all to a simmer. Let it simmer nice and vigorously for 30 minutes, by which time the potatoes should be tender. And then with a wooden spoon, smash some of the potatoes into the side of the pot. Now, that adds extra thickening. And then add, finally, your cream part, which is either a cup of whole milk or could be light cream or half and half, whatever you want to put in there. Stir well, and then usually it needs to simmer a few more minutes. Don't rush this. If after a half an hour of simmering with the potatoes and barley, I wouldn't worry about the celery, and the barley isn't super-duper tender, then just keep simmering it a little longer. Really good soup with almost nothing in it. If you look at it, onion, celery, butter, of course, is a wonderful addition. So the other...
season with the usual?
Yeah, salt and pepper.
Yeah, the celery probably is the one that just takes it out of into a new...
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. And, you know, if you want to make this, but you don't have any barley in the house, just forget about the barley. But I always have barley in the house, I got to say. And one of the other Jewish soups, you know, when I say Jewish soups, not every Jew makes soups like this. These are Eastern European soups. And flash forward from my youth to my 30s, and New York at that time, the 70s and 80s, had what I used to call Polish coffee shops. I'm not sure I could find one anymore, but the Polish coffee shops, I say coffee shops because they had American coffee shop type diner food, but also Polish things like soups. They always had great soups, and a lot of us just went to these places for the soups. And among them would be a mushroom barley soup. Now, the mushrooms for mushroom barley soup are not fresh mushrooms. They're they should be Polish or Lithuanian, Eastern European wild mushrooms, dried mushrooms. These are the same family as Porcini. So these days, I use Porcini, which are much easier to find, believe it or not, than the old-fashioned dried mushrooms from, well, they probably weren't from Eastern Europe, but they were good. Nowadays, I have seen in the supermarket plastic boxes with dried mushrooms. It looks like the same box my grandmother would have bought. But inside are these tasteless Chinese mushrooms. So don't, if it says product of China, just leave it on the shelf. And buy some, you know, you don't need a lot of porcini. They're very expensive because they really have a lot of flavor. And I like them so much. I even came up with a soup that not Jewish at all, mushroom barley soup. And the recipe is in my best-selling cookbook. I'm plugging myself here. Soup Suppers, which I know you have, Jill.
Which I can get right this second if you want.
It continues to sell. I think I got $23 in royalties last year.
I'm telling you, that book is for anybody who is interested in just eating, I don't know how to say this, just proper, basic, clean, fabulous food. What's so great about it is the Soup Suppers are full-bore meals. Not just the soups, it's what you put them with.
Yeah, you know, they weren't just soups, because the idea of the book was, in fact, this is, a cute story. I'm walking down the street with my then book editor, and she's telling me that she just rejected a book on baking bread and making soup, in the same book, Bread and Soup. And by the way, and it was being proposed by a very well-known baking teacher, a bread baking teacher. And I thought, well, that's a nice idea. She said, oh, I don't know. I said, well, you can call it Soup Suppers. She said, oh, if she'd proposed that title, I might have been more interested. So that's how Soup Suppers came about.
And now, fast forward in time when both soup and supper are totally different concepts, you know, you have to know what's in the book. But it's fantastic.
It's main course soups and accompaniments for the soups and some desserts.
Easy
desserts. But back to Jewish soup. You know, my father always used to judge soup with how thick it was. I mean,
we have to mention Marshall because, you know, Marshall's whole, one of his basic connections with his dad was they ate soup together, lots of it, because apparently Jackie would not, it was not a meal unless it started with soup. And so those were
the rules. That's funny. You know, Marshall's father was a stand-up comic.
Right.
I bet you he had a lot of jokes about soup,
I bet
too.
He did, too. And, you know, and when did you say that? Who doesn't immediately think of borscht belt, and who doesn't immediately go that borscht is a soup?
Right, borscht is soup. So in fact, one of the Jewish soups I was going to talk about today is it first came to my mind when I woke up, is my grandmother's sweet and sour cabbage borscht, we called it, cabbage soup. And the reason I thought of that at first is it's at one time, and in soups, there is a recipe for it in Soup Suppers, but I don't make that recipe anymore. I make another one, I'll tell you in a minute. But this is the end of September, is the intersection of cabbage season, and it's the beginning of cabbage and the end of tomatoes. And it's a tomato-based soup,
right.
My grandmother's sweet and sour cabbage soup. And you made it sweet with sugar and sour with something called sour salt, which is citric acid crystals, which you can still buy. Because people use it to make pickles. I'm not sure that anybody uses it to sour sauces anymore. But along the way in my life, I went to a restaurant, I think it might still be there, called the Crown Restaurant, which a kosher, it's not really a deli because they had a lot more than delicatessen-type food. And it's in Borough Park, which is a very orthodox section of Brooklyn. Anyway, I eat this soup, and it tastes just like my grandmother's cabbage borscht. And I'm looking for a different recipe, because I'd already published my grandmother's cabbage borscht in soup suppers. So if I wanted to do this soup, which is an iconic Jewish soup, I needed to find a new recipe. So I'm in this restaurant, the Crown Restaurant in Borough Park, and the soup tastes just like my grandmother's. I run into the kitchen. I ask the Polish woman who's doing the cooking, you know, what was the secret to her cabbage soup? And you're not going to believe what it was. It was ketchup. The sweet and sour in this soup came from ketchup. And, of course, and then I realized ketchup was a very big ingredient among Jews in starting in the mid-20s when Heinz had the smarts to, in conjunction with the Orthodox Union, to come up with a symbol that they could put on their products that would tell Jews who were following their kosher laws that this was okay, this product, but it wouldn't turn off non-Jews. So, and it was the OU, which consists to this day. So Heinz came out with the first kosher commercial product, which was Heinz vegetarian beans in a can. And some of us will recall that in the old days you went into a Jewish delicatessen and there was a shelf always with lined up with cans of Heinz vegetarian beans. And ketchup was the second product that they made with the OU symbol, the kosher symbol. And it's a flavor profile, the sweet and sour, that Eastern European Jews love. So they adopted this. Now, I knew people who actually made spaghetti with ketchup, which is not what I wouldn't eat that.
I'm glad you had more of the Italian.
Having grown up upstairs from a Neapolitan family, I knew better.
I have to just, I'm sorry, but it's just...
Go ahead.
Ketchup, yeah, it's one of those things that everybody looked at me when I wouldn't eat it. Weird. So I have that to this day.
Well, so this is the easy sweet and sour cabbage soup, or borscht, if you want to call it that. I don't know why I have this. This is the recipe as it was in my book, Jewish Home Cooking. But it calls for boneless chuck. Now, chuck is, chuck is... I wouldn't these days use boneless chuck for this. I would use a couple, three pieces of flanken. Flanken is short ribs, but cut across the bone, not with the bone. You could even use short ribs. So the meat,
much more
in this case, we're not using broth, but we're creating a meaty flavor.
Right.
So we're going to combine a couple pounds of meat with 4 quarts of water and salt, you need a good amount of salt, a tablespoon of salt, and simmer that for an hour. And then you can add the other ingredients, which would be a 3-pound head of green cabbage, which you will slice into thin slices. I always cut it in half, remove the core, and then cut it into quarters, and then if you cut across the quarters, you get very good thin slices. 1.5 cups of ketchup. Now, I have to say that Mr. Harn had bought a jumbo-size bottle of ketchup recently, and I didn't know what to do with it. Now I do. So, and then... Now, a can of tomato paste, one of those little cans of tomato paste. I only have 2 tomato paste, so I'm just going to add, I don't know, maybe 1/4 cup of my tube tomato paste. You do need a little sugar. A couple tablespoons should do it. You need quite a bit of pepper, at least 1/2 teaspoon of freshly ground pepper. You throw that all into the pot with what you now have is a sort of a beef broth, and let that simmer for 2 hours. The cabbage takes a long time. And in fact, what I like to do is make this ahead and then let it cool to room temperature, refrigerate it, and then the next morning, you can skim off any fat that's come to the top, which there will be, and reheat the soup. And it tastes better reheated, as so many things do. So that's a real Jewishy soup, sweet and sour cabbage borscht. With no weirdo ingredients that you have
no.
to go out of your
and
way
I'm,
for.
I get confused. Can you talk for a second about citric acid, which is so-called sour salt?
What about it?
It seems like that is an ingredient in almost everything.
Well, you
and
can
I
buy
don't know whether it's diluted
I'm not
or...
sure where you buy it, but I know it's around. When I wrote Soup Suppers,
mm-hmm.
I was teaching in the metro area here, in different cooking schools. I'm going to look up, what year did I write this? I don't even remember. It's a while back. One second here. Is 1994. Okay. So back in 94, citric acid crystals were not so easy to find. And as I was teaching the soup, I bought some from King Arthur, the flower people.
Right.
They sell it. And I bought some from them. And I still have and what I did was I packed it, whatever my recipe called for, maybe a couple times my recipe called for. I packed it into envelopes and gave it out to my students in cooking school so that they could go home and make the same soup. But truthfully, a lot of people use lemon juice instead of citric acid.
Okay.
Vinegar, you can use plain old distilled white vinegar. You need a souring agent.
Right. It does
yeah.
the same thing.
So citric acid crystal. So I have a lifetime. I'm going to say, I hate saying lifetime supply.
You've got a lot.
I have a lot of, if anybody wants.
With the cookbooks.
I have a jar full here.
Why don't you?
I mean, as much as I gave away, I still have a lot. A little bit goes a long way.
True.
And anyway, so that's one of my cheap soups for the season. I don't make it with the fresh tomatoes anymore, but there you go. And the potato soup. And among these Jewish soups, and I mentioned mushroom barley, is split pea soup. Now, I don't think most people understand that split pea soup is also a Jewishy soup. It's another Eastern European soup, but not you would never make it with a ham hock
right.
because... should be kosher, but I'll tell you a secret to make it nice and sweet is I learned this from literally my mother's friend's grandmother. It's an old recipe. Grate in a small sweet potato into the pot with the split peas. I grate carrot and if I want parsnip. I just grate them right into the pot with the split peas. Salt, you let it simmer away, and you don't need any meat. It can be totally vegetarian. Actually, it's vegan. No sautéing. It's all boiled. And, oh, by the way, the mushroom barley soup, I have a really good recipe for mushroom barley soup, which mimics the packaged mushroom barley soup that I think most of us grew up eating. At least I did, anyway, which is the Manischewitz or other companies that made Jewish products had in a cellophane, it was like a tube bag, a cellophane bag, had a mix of whatever the soup was and a packet of bouillon crystals. Well, I decided, this is Arthur in his 20s, that I wasn't going to have bouillon crystals. I was going to make it with real broth. But what about the other ingredients? So I emptied out a bag of this soup mix, and I literally counted and weighed the lima beans, the split peas, all the ingredients that were in this. And let me give you, I can give you the proportions actually. No. Not in that file. So, yeah. And also, I have no broth in the house. So it's cool enough today that I'm going to get some chicken backs and make enough broth so I can put some away in the freezer. Because that always makes me feel secure.
So you use chicken backs when you're starting from scratch?
Yeah. My butcher, And he's not the only one, I'm sure. In fact, I know that Whole Foods does this, but it's
right.
hard to find them. I know where they hide them in the freezer case, but my butcher sells me backs because he sells a lot of chicken breasts, you know.
Right.
So he freezes backs, and they're in 3-pound packages. So I can do two. Some days I feel I'll do 3 packages. I have a huge stock pot, and I put those in the stock pot. They could be frozen, by the way, because they're going to defrost quick enough. Cover them with water and bring it to a simmer. And as they break apart and defrost, you'll see you get a lot of ugly scum coming to the top. You have to skim that off.
Right.
And once the foam is not colored, not looking ugly, or none at all, you can add some flavorings, like a couple carrots, some ribs of celery, an onion, which I quarter, or not all the way through, but I cut through, and I poke it with a few cloves, some peppercorns, salt, of course, a good amount of salt, and let that simmer for really 6 hours. And I end up, and if you have to add water, that's okay. I have a real stock pot, which is a narrow pot, so
right.
I don't get great evaporation.
Yes.
If it's a wide-mouth pot, it'll evaporate more. But anyway, make sure everything stays covered with water. And by the way, you can always reduce this later. I figure more or less a quart of, for six, let's say 6 pounds of backs, I'll get 5 quarts of really good soup. And it's good enough to be soup, meaning we can just have some noodles in it. We don't do rice, but you could do chicken rice soup.
Right.
And there's no meat to speak of on these backs. And you will also, after 6 hours of simmering, by the way, you can put some parsley stems in there. You can add a bay leaf. It doesn't need a lot of seasoning at this point. But you will get a broth that gels when it's cold.
Mm.
I mean, yeah, and that's so good.
That's so good.
Not that you have to eat it as a gel, but it adds texture to whatever you're making. The gelatin and the
right.
soup.
Do you then freeze it, or do you always use it?
Yes. No, I mean, yeah, I freeze it in 1 quart plastic containers.
But when you unfreeze them, is it still gel, or is that over?
Well, what I do is let the soup cool down, strain it. So now you're taking out all the big stuff.
Right.
Strain it, refrigerate it overnight. You'll get a nice layer of fat on the top. Skim that off. I sometimes cook with that. It makes very good matzo balls, soup fat. And then bring it to a simmer again. And this time, I'm going to strain it one more time, but this time I'm going to strain it through. That's actually an old linen napkin that I use just for this, but cheesecloth is good too. It's what most people will tell you to use. And that's it. Now I can freeze it.
Right.
And I'm going to have nearly fat-free, clear broth. If we want to have it just for broth's sake, it's wonderful. And if I want to cook with it, it's in 1-quart boxes, and I can measure it out. It's easy enough.
Sounds really smart. One day I'm going to ask you a question about the smell of cabbage, but not today.
Okay. I'll investigate that, because, truthfully, I never had the smell of cabbage, so I'm doing something right, I guess.
And I cook
a lot of cabbage, too.
Yeah, and I want to know the trick, and you're going to tell.
All right, I'll see if I can figure out if there is a trick.
All right, so right now... I'm going to thank
right
you.
Now, everybody have a gloriously cool fall week.
Well, it's officially fall.
It's officially fall, right.
That's always good. You like fall. And you too. And love to Bob. And thank you so much, Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, the food maverick, the food magician on Robin Hood Radio.